Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject. Well, I'm sure you're familiar with certain aspects of it. The title of the book we're going to be discussing is The Cosmic Internet. My guest is Frank DeMarco, and right now he is hoping and praying that thunderstorms and all of the activity that I'm sure the Hurricane Irene is beginning to stimulate in his area doesn't cause a problem for us. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm not very worried. You'll be okay.
We'll be okay. Terrific. This is a man that has an extremely positive attitude, but there's more behind Frank's, within Frank's background. He was the co-founder of Hampton Roads Publishing Company and for 16 years served as their chief editor. He's written other books and he does workshops. This book, The Cosmic Internet, has to do with explanations from the other side. Frank, you're a man that has seen in your 16 years with Hampton Roads. You saw so many publications cross your desk. When you were looking at these proposals for publications, what was it that you really wanted to see in them? What was it that intrigued you about this?
We always looked, at least I always looked for what I called self-help metaphysics. I wanted something that wouldn't be all just woo-woo and up in the air, but it would be something that might help people to actually get better command of their lives or see things in a more clear and helpful fashion. I never wanted to do something that would only be sensational.
Well, your book is definitely of that genre, and you have a quote right in the beginning by Yeats. Says, "It is not that I've accomplished too few of my plans, for I'm not ambitious, but when I think of all the books I've read, and of the wise words I've heard spoken, and of the anxiety I have given to parents and grandparents, and of the hopes that I've had, all life weighed in the scales of my own life seemed to me a preparation for something that never happens."
You've picked my favorite quotation among the quotes that I picked. And I used to have that feeling decades ago because I would think you spend a lifetime acquiring a skill or learning a subject or extending yourself in love to other people, you know. And the minute you're gone, it's gone. That's how it seemed. And that was almost paralyzing. Really, truly. That sounds too dramatic, but really it was almost paralyzing because I thought, well, what's the use? You know, if you do something and then it's going to vanish, what's the use? And I think that many people today are probably still paralyzed by that same kind of feeling because our society doesn't give you a lot of hope. We don't really seem to have a coherent vision of an afterlife or of the non-physical. We have two or three competing visions, but they don't mix, you know. You might have a religious vision that depends upon scripture. You might have a scientific non-vision which says there's no such thing as an afterlife or the non-physical. And you might have a lot of people who are in the New Age movement or who are, in one way or another, explorers on their own, and they really, you know, they're sort of making it up as they go along because there's no accepted paradigm. So I was very pleased when the guys gave me this. I thought this might serve. This might help a lot of people.
Well, I really was interested in your story because you came from a particular tradition and cultural environment, and I loved how you said it. Nobody, as far as you knew, ever talked to people on the other side. And that always is so much fun to me because I am a spiritualist minister. And so this is not something that sounds woo-woo to me at all. But to a lot of people, when they hear it, it's like the hackle goes up on the back of their neck. And they go, uh-oh, what are we doing here? And invariably, they will have a story to tell about an experience they've had or a loved one has had. And I thought, what hypocrisy.
I don't think it's hypocrisy, Donna.
Oh.
I think they've walled it off because it's too uncomfortable. You know, they can't fit it with the rest of their beliefs, and they're not ready to jettison those beliefs. You may be the one, you may be the bridge that helps them put it back together. I don't know.
That's a very good point. That is a very good point. And the reason I call it a hypocrisy is because in so many backgrounds, these people will talk about these experiences, but they belong to someone else. I can remember going even to a particular group. We were invited, my husband and I, to go and meet with these people. And when they found out the work that I did, that I was in the psychic area and I'd been in it for quite a while, they said, oh, no, that's not permitted.
Yeah,
I had to laugh because by the end of the evening, there was one circle of people around my husband and the other one was around me. And people are telling me about all of these experiences they have. Can you please help me understand what's going on? I said, sure.
Yeah, and you saw exactly that. They were divided within themselves.
Yeah.
They live in one world, but they profess in another, so to speak. You know, their opinions tell them the world is one way, but their experiences tell them something different. It's a real problem.
It is. You make a good statement in your book. You say our explorations are hampered by careless assumptions and bad definitions. And when I'm teaching classes, I find that there is such a relief for people when they feel like they can have a better way of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating thing. What brought you to that point that there are careless assumptions and bad definitions?
Well, basically, I think I've been under about a 10-year tutelage from what I call the guys upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And over that time, they've made it clear that a lot of things that look to us like paradoxes or like impossibilities, or like choose this but not that, a lot of those things actually stem from the fact that a little farther back, you made an assumption and didn't realize it. As an example, they say, we always think of ourselves as units. And they said, you as individuals are not units at all. At least you could be not looked at that way.
Mm-hmm.
You're a combination of millions of threads that you're holding together. And there are all these links between you and other people, not only in terms of affection or talking to them, but in, you know, if you have past lives, they're connected that way. If you have any kind of traits and resonances, that sort of weaves you in with other people. And
mm-hmm.
when you follow it far enough, you realize, just as the mystics have always said, we're all one thing.
I agree. And there is that harmonic that is in place that I find extremely fascinating. Now, you talk about a very good friend of yours, Rita Warren, and she had worked with Bob Monroe's Monroe Institute for a few years. And I had to chuckle because you said she began a long series of weekly sessions with the guys upstairs.
That's what
I love that because it portrays a picture. How did you end up becoming what some people would call a channel? Some would call you a medium. Getting information and transcribing it. Did it start with Rita? Is this something that in your association with her? Or when did it start?
Oh, no. This started way back in 1989.
Oh,
my. I've been reading about these things for years. And at first, you know, when you read, well, maybe not in your case, but in mine, coming out of my own background, at first when you read about Edgar Cayce or you read about Jane Roberts or someone, you think, wow, this is something. What a phenomenal gift these people had. And they're different from us. Well, the first part is true. They did have a phenomenal gift. But the second part isn't true because, in my experience, pretty nearly anybody can learn to talk with their own guidance or with other beings to a degree. They may not, I always tell them, anybody can learn to play the piano badly. You may never be able to be Paderewski, but you can always play chopsticks. You know,
That's true.
A lot of it depends how important is it to you. So over time, one day in 1969, in the summer, I mean in 1989, I just began trying it. I thought, well, you know, let me see what happens here. I've kept a journal since I was 20 years old, so that's the most convenient, the most comfortable thing for me. I sat down and I wrote out a question, and I sat there waiting for my pen to do something, right? Because my understanding was the pen is going to take over, you know, and then, well, it didn't happen that way. And I thought, well, I must be doing this wrong, you know. But eventually, to skip through, what I learned is, if you ask a sincere question, and you wait in a receptive state, and if something occurs to you, you begin writing it out, then it wells up. And the analogy I make with people is, when we write a letter or an email to people, we don't have the whole thing memorized ahead of time. We write the first couple of words or the first couple of sentences, and as we're writing them, that frees something inside and more well up after us. It's really very simple. It's a simple process. It seems to me the biggest problem that people have is they're trying to make it more complicated or more unusual. They want more bells and whistles than it comes with.
That's a very good point. And something I think I'd like to add to what you have just said is that many times, dependent on the way a person's mind works, because everybody has their own mind language, they might get images. They might actually hear something. They may be aware that they are just thoughts floating through, like little fragments. And something that my mentor taught me many years ago is just put down what you get. Don't add anything to it. Don't take anything away from it. Just put it down.
That's right. And don't criticize it. Don't be trying to analyze it when you're trying to get it. Yes. Which
right.
is the same statement, really, come to think of it.
Mm-hmm. So here you are. You're doing this. You make a comment that our great-grandchildren are going to live within a new myth. All of us have a myth around ourselves that somehow or another we need to learn to understand so that we can create a new story if we want to. And it has to do with how we perceive our realities. And you can take 10 people, for example, at a crime scene, and a situation happens. You've got 10 different versions maybe of the same event.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. And people's perceptions of life go along in that, say, and they all have their own time frames and their own zones that they're in, and it's not good or bad. It just seems to be the human condition. And when
I guess what I was thinking of was more the culture in general, because right now we don't have a common myth anymore. It's sort of disintegrated. So some people believe in science and some religion and some in intuition and some in art, and they all go in different directions. And it makes our society sort of schizophrenic, if you haven't noticed, if you haven't been looking at the news.
I think
what will happen is when we get a new version of reality that we can understand, when we get when science no longer systematically excludes the stuff that you and I know,
mm-hmm.
and when religion not only accepts it but realizes this is part of God's gift to us, you know, not only the creativity, but the curiosity and the ability to analyze it and all that, that'll be a whole new world, especially if people are walking around in their bodies knowing that they're connected to the other side. And the guys have told me that's our next step. That'll be a much more hopeful world to live in and a much more comfortable world. You and I may never live long enough to see it.
Well, who knows?
Who knows?
You don't know. You used a term I really liked, time slices.
Mm-hmm.
Tell my audience what that is.
The difference between the non-physical world and the physical world, one of the main differences is that time to them is sort of like geography is to us. They can pop in here or pop in there or pop in somewhere else, whereas we are always living our life in a distorted fashion because the present moment right now is always the only thing we can deal with. It's the most important. It's more important than the whole rest of our lives combined. And, of course, 1 minute later, you're in another minute, which is the most important one. So we always see our life in time slices, and it takes an effort to see our life in a different kind of perspective. And that's one of the things that they're encouraging us to do, is learn to see it in more perspective. And one way you do that is by being in active communication with your own guidance. So, you know, when you and I started this show, that was the present moment then, and that's where we were focused. Well, now it isn't. Now we're focused on this present moment, which is sliding out from under us right as we talk. That's just the way it is, but it's people don't necessarily even recognize it. You know, it's just we take it for granted.
You ask a question in your book, how does anyone come into life knowing certain things while at the same time being ignorant of the life they're going to lead? Boy, I can remember asking that type of a question myself many years ago, and sometimes it still pops up. How would you respond to that question? What would you say to my audience?
I wish I could remember who it was, but somebody said something so simple. He said, life never makes sense looking forward, but it always makes sense looking backwards. And I think that's our situation. You know, you're 25 years old and you're ready to live your life and you have all these plans, or you may not even have plans, but you have ideas and expectations. By the time you're 50 or 60, you know, you look back, It didn't happen that way at all, but you see all the things that looked accidental at the time that were a pattern. And, I mean, depending on your mindset, many people resist seeing that kind of pattern, but that's the way I would look at things. And you say, well, you know, this happened, and then nothing else happened for 3 years, but then this happened. And I can see that the thing was aiming me in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't see it ahead of time. At least I can't. Maybe you can. I can't.
Frequently, I think it is best we don't.
I agree with you.
I really think that we probably would put the brakes on and say, well, I don't think so, not today. And
the guys have said, you know, if you're trying to do something new, the less you know about it, the better off you are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Rings and threads.
That's the biggie, or one of the biggest ones.
All right, so talk to us about rings and threads.
Instead of thinking of ourselves as units, we could look at ourselves as bundles of threads that have been put together at our birth. And threads could mean something. They could mean moral traits. They could mean physical traits. They could mean emotional or mental traits. They could mean aptitudes, and they do. So you have all of those. So they put together and they say, okay, we're going to make this guy red-haired, left-handed, artistic, give him a bad temper. I mean, I'm saying they, but in a way it's we because we're participating, you know, in the planning. But that's all right. All the threads come together. Those threads hook people. Everybody with red hair has that thread in common. And although it's a poor example because that seems so trivial, you can follow along those threads and see people's connection in ways that they themselves can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Guys told me once, and this one really shook me, but I liked it. They said everybody who reads a book is in direct connection with the author of that book and, through the author, with everybody else who's read that book. Now, I mean, and that's an example of threads and what they do mm-hmm. to our lives. So imagine Plato, who wrote a book, 2,000 years ago, and for 2,000 years it's been a mainstay of the Western culture. Look at the impact that had, and look at the way that holds us all together in ways we don't ever suspect.
Very true. And I would concur with that statement. There are so many things that bring a level of communication between people. When you ask someone, gee, do you watch Fox News? Do you watch CNN? And somebody says no, you immediately know you're not going to be able to communicate with them because they do not have the awareness you do of what's going on when they're watching that. With a book, it's the same thing, and it's not unlike experience. How can you talk to someone about what it's like to go crab fishing in Alaska when they've never even been on a boat?
Well, the interesting thing there is the guys have said that our physical body obviously lives in the physical world, but our minds are in the non-physical, and
mm-hmm.
they connect by way of the nervous system. Therefore, the minds can do what they can do in the non-physical, which is travel somewhere else, other times, remote view, have telepathy, you know, have precognition. So all of those very woo-woo things that people are trying to make sense of how they're possible, to the guys upstairs, they're saying, well, it's perfectly obvious. You're in the non-physical right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind, in other words, operates with different rules than the body does.
Very true. Very true. Lives within a life. You say, we live many lives within each life. Why and how?
Well, if you'll think back to when you were 15 years old, if you can remember the way you thought life was and the things that were important to you, and really just the way you were, I think you'll find you were a different person than you were when you were 25 or 35. There were important continuities, but in many ways you were a different person. Someone may today be obsessed with auto mechanics, and 5 years ago they used to be into sports fishing or something, you know, and 10 years from now they develop this real love for, I don't know, fine portraits. In each of those cases, it's obviously the same person in common day thinking, but it's also significantly different mentally. They're living in a different mental world, which means the people that they resonate with on the other side, their guys upstairs, will be different each time because the resonance will be different because their interests are different. It's like you picked up some threads and put down other threads from within you, and you chose to develop one side of yourself instead of another.
You have a quote by Emerson out of his journal, And this is what Emerson said. If you think you came into being for the purpose of taking an important part in the administration of events, to guard a province of the moral creation from ruin, and that its salvation hinges on the success of your single arm, you have wholly mistaken your business.
Isn't that a wonderful quotation? And he was like 25 or 23 or something at the time.
He was a body of wisdom, body and mind of wisdom.
He was an amazing light bearer.
Yes, really. Every moment has its own light. Every moment has its essence. And it's very difficult for us, I think, many times to see the value of that. But there really is no such thing as time or space, in my view. Yet we do live within time frames because we have to create them where we are.
Yeah. What they usually say is change your viewpoint on everything and look at it from two or three points of view rather than say something is this way or that. And if I were to question them on is there time and space, they'd say, well, yes, but no, is what they often do. You know,
mm-hmm.
From a certain point of view, obviously space and time exist because we're living in them.
Right.
And there's something that keeps the non-physical side of things. You know how somebody, I think it was a joke, but it actually makes a lot of sense. They said time is the thing that stops everything from happening at the same, all at once. And
mm-hmm.
space is the thing that stops everything from being jammed up altogether. Well, there has to be some equivalent on the other side as well. And they've described, and it's in my book, you know, the nature of time on their side. But it's obviously not the same as it is here.
You bring out a point that there are three levels of mind. I was intrigued with this because the kahunas of Hawaii speak of the three levels of mind.
Oh, and now that's an interesting thought. I hadn't put that together.
Yes, it's the conscious, the subconscious, and the superconscious. And those are modern terminologies.
Right, that's the way to look at it.
And
well, you know, the guys upstairs... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. So when I read this, I said, ooh, this is like what the kahunas felt.
They said one thing that I've never seen anywhere else, though. They've said you could look at us, meaning the whole non-physical minds that are all connected up there, you could look at us as your, meaning humanity's, unconscious mind. We are the unconscious mind, and you're the conscious mind. And what they've said by that is when we connect with them, it's like we sort of light them up a little bit more. They're a little more conscious than we are because we're stuck in one time and one place, which has its problems. But one of the advantages is it makes our consciousness very pointed, very, very powerful. And so when we are connecting with them, they're a little more lit up than they would be otherwise, and we have a little more perspective than we would otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it that way, I really, the more I think about that, the better I like it. They are our unconscious mind, and we are their conscious mind.
You have a section on souls, traits, and reincarnation. Now, I know there's a lot of people that don't believe in it. I do. I've had a number of very special experiences relative to myself and to others. And that is generally what triggers an awareness. What was the perspective that you were given on that?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because that would take a lot of time to describe well, and it's one of the most important parts of the books, I think, because I think it also explains why some people can see it in terms of reincarnation and some can't. And they're saying the reason that we have that division is because we're not seeing ourselves correctly. But they would say, supposing you're in a life and you come to be part of a new life, that new life is going to have a different physical heredity. It's going to have a different total mixture. It's going to be obviously in a different place with different surroundings and maybe a different task in life. So in a sense, you could say you didn't reincarnate at all. You're a part of this continuing spirit which moves, but the person who's Frank DeMarco is never going to be the ringmaster again. The ringmaster is how they describe us, what we would probably call the ego, holding together all the threads. You get one chance to be the ringmaster, but then later you can be a thread within, what they would call a, I can't think of the term offhand, you know, the sub-soul that would be a part of a soul coming in again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very provocative idea, and it stems from the fact that they're saying the reason we can't decide whether reincarnation is true or not is because we're thinking of ourselves as units when in fact we aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not a unit, then you look at things a little different and say, oh, okay, now I got it. This part went that way and this part went that way. And by the way, I am not saying this is the truth, but this is the way they are saying it, which I find helpful.
You have a couple of points that I want to bring out. You say, remember our purpose here. We want to free your consciousness from ideas that restrict your ability to intuit more productive relations. And then the comment, don't live your lives at random. It's a waste of opportunity. Talk about those two statements.
It's interesting you would put those two together. To start at the last one, this is the only chance that we will have to be here in this particular mixture, as far as I know. People would have different definitions of what it means to live your life at random, but I would think if you're aware that you can continually bring yourself to a more conscious place, if you're aware that you can overcome your past, what I call robots, and get more control over your life, you're going to lead a more joyous life, and you're going to be more productive. You're going to come out of the life that we wind up with when we finish making a lifetime's worth of choices is the life we're going to lead on the other side. And I think they're saying you will be sorry if you haven't done as much as you can to do your work while you're in the body, because it's not easy to change on the other side. Now, I realize that's a minority opinion. A lot of people don't say that, but I'm just giving you what they've given me.
You also bring out a point that I see in action right now, and of course it's nothing new. You see, a society that comes to term with a minority in its midst is one that has gained an advantage in complexity to set against its disadvantage in the loss of homogeneity. How each society deals with that new situation defines differences among them. And we are currently worldwide, partially due to technology, because there's a capacity for communication at a rate of speed that was unheard of before, unless you were telepathic, which everybody is, but most people don't know it. It's really fascinating. We can look at American history and see how minorities came in. We look at the Italians. We look at the Irish. We look at just about any culture that is coming in and how it dramatically affects us. It really does. It brings its own mix in, and I think that has been one of the strengths of the United States is the diversity.
It's been one of the strengths and one of the main strains as well, because everybody wants to keep what they're used to. And of course, every new group that comes in changes that, and people are often tempted to see it as a threat rather than as an opportunity.
Yes. Now let's talk about hunches quickly. You say, what are hunches but spurts of accepted guidance? What is luck but unconscious living in accordance with guidance?
You're picking very nice, good quotations.
I'm known for that. Anyway.
It's a way of saying that the more connected you are as you live, the easier your life flows. I mean, really, you can just put it that simply. You have more resources, you have more connection, you're more sure-footed. My father, who wouldn't have believed in any of this, as far as I know, was a very lucky man. He just was lucky, and I think that means he was in good connection with some part of his upstairs community, and it led him well. Doesn't mean he didn't have a lot of problems in his life. Everybody does. That's what life is.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that he was lucky.
I like your statement too, those that are giving you the information said you've come to a new way of being that is firmly rooted in the old. That is the only way that grafting works. Mm-hmm. Without firmly rooted stock, there is no base for the new to get its grip on life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is in so many levels of life's expression. It can have to do with cultural background. It can have to do with religious background. There is an essence of strength and solidarity in people that enables them, with that solidarity of self, that they are able to adapt to whatever changes may come their way, good, bad, or indifferent.
That's right.
And they're able to do that.
You weren't born into your own situation just by accident or by bad luck. You know, your situation you were born into is part of it. So I had a childhood spent mostly in the Catholic school until I was in 11th grade. And at the time, I came to really resent it. And, you know, when I left the Catholic Church for a while, I was very bitter about it. But then in retrospect, I thought, what a great opportunity to have my values shaped in such a way that I took for granted that the physical world is dependent upon the non-physical world, and that there are entities that are don't have a body who will communicate with us and have our best interest at heart. Now, you know, that's a wonderful, but I had to get free first. Mm-hmm. But having gotten free, to have thrown out the baby with the bathwater would have been to lose all those advantages. And instead, I could just say, okay, the church as an organization has problems, but there were things they were giving us that really were of value. And I'm sure that's true of every church.
I would agree with that. I think that we have to look beyond the dogma. We have to look at the essence that has been passed along of experiences of people that have been documented, regardless of what costume of structure they might be cloaked in. But you have to remember, you have to get to the meat of it. Frank, I know we're out of time. Your book, The Cosmic Internet, is quite interesting. What is the website people can go to find out more about you and your publication?
All right, and then go to this website, and I keep a blog there, and I've done it for 4 years. There's a lot of stuff on it. www.hologrambooks, that's HOLOGRAM, books.com. That'll get them to the rest of it. And there's an email in there where they can contact me if they want to.
Wonderful. Frank DeMarco, Explanations from the Other Side. Check out The Cosmic Internet. It will perhaps cause a provocative level of shift in your thinking, and you may say, wow, this makes sense, or it may cause you to ask questions that maybe you didn't know you wanted to ask. The Cosmic Internet, Frank DeMarco, thank you again for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. It's been fun.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number for you to call into if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. For those of you that are new listeners, all I need is your first name or your initial. After that, oh, of course, I always want to know where you're calling from. And after that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question when I finish about anything that you like. Now, tomorrow we're going to find out how to be fit, fun, and fabulous at any age, by the way. No limitation on that. Dr. Hartford is going to be my guest tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a great way to end the week. And next week, my newsletter will be coming out. I will be letting you know where I'm going to be traveling to, and there is going to be an up-to-date batch of information there for you. And I want to thank those of you that are sending me such wonderful videos. This is something that I'm trying to include in my newsletter, and I'll tell you, it is amazing. I am seeing things that I just don't have time to research. My goodness, we've got a lot of talented people on this planet, and it's a joy to be able to see what's being done on YouTube and other things. So I want to thank those of you that are sending me these special little tidbits. And if you have something that you would like for me to be able to share with my audience, or you feel it's important to give information on, then send me an email. Send it to Donna at Delphi Delphi International.com. That's Donna at Delphi International.com. And come to think of it, somebody had sent me some information on a credit card scam, but I don't have it at my fingertips here, so when I get it, I'll be sure to share it with you. You know, there's always those innovative thieves. It's often said that someone who is a criminal, if they put just as much energy into positive work, think of the difference they would make in life, and I would be in agreement with that. I wanted to share a thought with you today by David Fontana, and this is a man that has been very much involved with transpersonal psychology over in England and in other parts of the world. And he made the comment, he said, our lives are not lonely journeys bounded by the cradle and the grave, but part of an infinite pattern that embraces all things and offers us eternal horizons. Life is not a biological accident without ultimate meaning or purpose, but a gift to be accepted with gratitude and used as a priceless opportunity for spiritual growth and understanding. Central to this understanding is the realization that we are not the lords of creation, but its servants, and that it is our sacred duty to honor all life and to protect this beautiful planet that nurtures us all. I like to use the word custodian. I don't know if you are a person that enjoys antiques and things of historical application, but I do. I really have always appreciated them, and I don't necessarily want to own them. But I'll never forget watching a program. I used to work out on the treadmill early in the morning watching this show that came in from New York, and it was all about antiques, and it was wonderful. I just loved it. So sorry when it was taken off the air because I missed doing that when I was on the treadmill for that hour when I was getting my exercise. But what was so fascinating was a comment that was made by someone who had been out to see different people in different parts of the country who had these phenomenal collections. I mean, it could have been anything on thimbles, it could be posters, it could be on Dobermans, his history. It's amazing. And I would observe how very, very thoughtfully and carefully people took care of these things. And so much history was in their environment, whatever particular interest they might have. And someone made the comment, these people have been the custodians of history. That those that are the collectors, they are the ones that really cherish this. And so somewhere, somehow, things will come to the attention of other collectors when this person maybe wants to sell their collection or they're going to put it on eBay or whatever. It's fascinating. There is so much that we have a connection with. And so when we're custodians in life, whether it's antiques or whether we're concerned about the environment, whether we're in manufacturing and we want to make sure that we're able to produce products that are going to make our lives better, whatever venue you might be interested in, if you understand that while you're here, you're a custodian, not only of whatever it is that you really have a passion for, but also some other things, ethics. What's your integrity? What's your sincerity? What is it that you really want to be able to represent so that you can be that example that passes stuff on? And I think that really that's what we are. I can think of some beautiful things that I have, some of them that have been gifts to me. And I know my husband and I, when we got married, we were gifted with some wonderful items by an elderly couple who had enjoyed them. And I was just so stunned that they were so generous with what they gave us. But then I realized they had appreciated these things just so much for so many years, and they wanted these items to find a good home. They wanted these items to be valued. So they knew that when we got the items that they gifted us, that they would be taken care of. And one day, I will probably want to gift them to someone too, because that's the way life is. We pass it on. So we all are caretakers on one level or another. And we should take joy in whatever is in our life or whatever we may have. And when the time comes that we want to release it, don't be concerned. Don't feel like you've got to hoard things. It's not necessary. You pass it on. But you may want to be discriminating about where you pass it to or who you pass it on to. Regardless, that really is the reality of life. So it's how we respond as custodians to what we do. And when we look at our life from a perspective, and that's one of many, but if you look at it like that, then you realize you don't have to become possessive about everything. But you can enjoy beauty and magnificence, and if you want to own a part of it, wonderful. But the day may come, you may want to pass it on. So it's just, it's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful liberating feeling, I think, because as custodians, the joy and the beauty of what we have can be so much more in, so much more savored. It's like a fine wine or a delicious meal, savoring it, not just trying to dry it out and preserve it, dehydrate it, so it's going to just be in some corner somewhere gathering a bunch of dust, but really enjoy it so that it can enrich not just your life, but the lives of other people. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, I have got a story for you, and it is one that I came across, and it really intrigued me, and now here we go. I wondered where I put my marker. Couldn't find it. Okay, this is about a lighthouse. This is a mystery that has never been solved. And it is the year 1900. That was the year my grandmother was born. On December 26, 1900, there was a supply ship that arrived at the lighthouse of a Scottish island of Eileen Moore. Now, the supply ship's name was Hesperus. When they arrived at the lighthouse, they found it was deserted. The dock was devoid of empty crates, mooring ropes, and there was no light at the lighthouse. 11 days earlier, a 140,000 candle power light had gone out. And there was a lighthouse keeper on an outer Hebrides Island, 17 miles away. He could not abandon his post because storms were just furious to go and find out why this happened. Well, men from the Hesperus ferried in, jumped ashore, because they were curious. This was very, very odd. Now, the gate to the lighthouse was closed, as well as the main door to the lighthouse. Inside the lighthouse, the building was very cold, and there was nobody there. It was totally deserted. There were three male lighthouse keepers that had been living there. The clock on the mantle had stopped ticking. Two out of the three oilskin reindeer suits were gone. And up the stairs in the turret of the lighthouse, beds were made. The wicks on the lanterns had been trimmed, were ready to be lit, and there was a final entry in the log, they called it a record slate, on the morning of December 15th. The lighthouse log stated that the sea was finally calm after a very strange storm. Now, this storm was not experienced nor witnessed by anyone else in the area. And it said in the log that the three men were praying, God is over all. Now, there's a cement platform 65 feet above the waterline. There was a crane on that platform that ropes were hanging from it, and the ropes were usually stored in a tool chest in an even higher crevice. The chest, missing. People were speculating that some phenomenal wave had carried the box and all three men out to sea. But questions couldn't be answered. What were those questions? The day that the lighthouse first stayed dark was a perfectly calm day. There wasn't a storm around. Also, just two sets of storm gear were missing. And not one of those men would have ever gone out onto the jetty on a bad night. Furious storms, they wouldn't have done that. So the questions were never answered, but the natives of the Scottish Islands believe that Eileen Moore was haunted and refused to remain on the island overnight, and no bodies were ever discovered. Not one of the men were ever seen or found again. A mystery. That's right. Scottish Islands. They happen everywhere. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. By the way, I want to thank Monique Chapman. I did a show with her last night and just had a fabulous time. We had callers from all over the country. It was just an absolute delight, and she is just a wonderful host. So I want to, again, honor her and respect her because she's very gracious. We've been working together off and on for years, and it's always a delight to interview with her. I want to talk for a moment about household cleaning items and something that if you have children around or pets and you're concerned about maybe having some items that are toxic for cleaning and you don't want to have them exposed to it, one of the most common inexpensive cleaning agents you possibly can have is baking soda. It's so versatile. It's absolutely amazing. And it's something I've used in my house for a lot of years. It's been a part of keeping odors out of the refrigerator for as far back as I can remember. All you have to do is get a box, you know, open up the top and just leave it in the fridge, and the baking soda just absorbs odors. And it's very good for removing perspiration stains from your fabrics. All you have to do is moisten and brush a little bit right onto the stain before you put the garment in the wash. You don't want to do it and then leave it. You want to be able to do it just before you do the wash. Also, great for dealing with bee stings, bug bites, and burns. And something that is, I think, really good for the teeth and the gums is making a paste with a little bit of hydrogen peroxide and baking soda. It's amazing. It will get all of that plaque out of your mouth. It's just great. I've been using hydrogen peroxide for years as a mouthwash, and it's really good stuff. Carpeting, if you've got wine or grease stains, put a little bit of baking soda on a cloth, blot the stain, but don't rub too hard. And then grease and electrical fires, always have one of those, what I call shakers. And often you'll find them in country-type restaurants. They're those great big aluminum things that have the big holes. Put your baking soda in that, and if you want to keep it from clotting, just add a little bit of the rice granules. But if you have a fire, all you have to do is dump baking soda on it. If you have something like that on your stove, boom, smoke is stopped, the burning is stopped. It's amazing. It's great to have there. And if you have enamelware, food sticks to the bottom, add 3 tablespoons of baking soda to enough boiling water covering the bottom of the pan. Just let it soak. The stuff will come off. And this is something I didn't know. and I'm going to try it. I haven't done it yet. But if you want to eliminate bug stains and bird droppings, and you know, I don't know about you, but here in the Pacific Northwest, we have droppings that come off the tree, and they glob on to your car. And I need to try this. You can take and make a little paste, a very light paste, with baking soda and water. And taking a rag, you put the paste on the bug stains and bird droppings. Just leave it alone. Let it just sit and do its work for about 5 minutes, and you can wipe it off. You can use it on bumpers, hubcaps, and chrome. So it's just a great, great item. Very, very inexpensive. Why not keep it around the house? It sure can serve you in so many wonderful ways. And again, it's a non-toxic product. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be having the opportunity to be fit, fun, and fabulous, no matter what your age is. And it does work. I can remember talking with Jack LaLanne when I interviewed him on one of my shows, and he just said he had 90-year-old people in rest homes that he'd go out and he'd talk to, and he'd say, start working with weights, and he'd use just little dumbbells or cans of vegetables. And people found that just by exercising a little bit, they were getting their muscle strength back and their stamina. It's a reality. It really is. So no matter what your age, you can be fit, fun, and fabulous. So we'll be getting the lowdown on that tomorrow. Earwigs. Now, this time of the year, you go out into your yard, you go out to do any work, you move a rock, you move a piece of wood, and you got bugs all over the place. When I was out at the Wren Fair, and we were taking everything down, the canopy and that kind of stuff, and we lifted the carpet, here were all of these beetles that went scattering in every direction imaginable. We forget about these creatures that are part of our life. Usually the first thing we want to do is go, ew, yuck, squash. Well, that may not be such a good idea. Earwigs. Now, these are the little creatures that when you look at them, they look like something out of Star Wars, a Darth Vader special. They got the little pinchers, and they are just not the most attractive things in the world. And they're little. They're little, and they move so fast. They're about 3/4 of an inch long, reddish-brown, and they have tails that look like forceps. That's how they've been described. Well, people seem to think that there's a lot more of them than have ever been, but not really. They really aren't. But what's happening is that people forget that they are part of your garden. They're a part of your life. And our yards, our ecosystem, and when we add decks and we have mulch beds full of organic matter, that's where they're going to be. They just absolutely love it. Love it. So what you've got is an insect that, to the best of their awareness, is about 208 million years old. And there's about 1,100 species of earwigs that are scattered everywhere. The only place where you won't find them is in the polar regions. And there is just one, apparently, that came over from Holland and has been with us since 1907. Guess where they started? Here in Seattle, Washington? Yes. Well, from Seattle, they've gone all over the country. That's right. Donald Lewis, who is an entomologist at Iowa State University, said that to the best of their knowledge, it could have been here earlier, but they feel it came in about 1907. And they are prolific in breeding, and they are just amazing. It doesn't take them long to find their little nooks and crannies because they like close, moist places. And they usually are found outdoors. They like to be under logs, leaves, boards, stones, in any kind of organic matter that's just going to give them everything they need. Now, what's interesting about earwigs is that nocturnal. That's right. And they love to feed on decaying plant material and wood, but if hungry, they will go after living plants, including vegetables, fruit trees, and ornamentals if they have the chance. They are really, really busy people, busy insect people, I should say. Now, one thing you need to know about them, or a couple of things, actually. They like to feed on aphids, maggots, and armyworms, and they break down organic material. So here we have some insects that we would probably not want to have too much time with. Yet they're doing us a favor on so many, many levels. So they said if you don't want them in your home, because they usually don't like being in people's houses, you need to make sure that when you bring in anything from the outside, flowers, vegetables, firewood, whatever, you need to be sure that you're not bringing them into the house. And they said, you know, you just have to remember, vacuum them up, but you've got to keep them out of the house. And also, don't put mulch up close to your house. I had someone the other day say, whatever you do, don't put plants close to the perimeter of your home. It's not a good thing. Have a zone of bare soil, dry it out, and seal any cracks in the foundation, and those happy little critters will not occupy your home. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight sharing this hour with you. Have a fabulous evening, a wonderful day, no matter where you are. Know you're blessed beyond belief. Donna Sebo will talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.